Welcome to Civil Discourse. This podcast will use government documents to illuminate the workings of the American government and offer context around the effects of government agencies in your everyday life. And now your hosts, Nia Rogers, Public Affairs Librarian, and Dr. John Augenbaugh, Political Science Professor.
Hey, Augie.
Good morning, Nia. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good.
Our episode today, okay, so listeners, you know how Augie usually crushes my soul and kills my dreams of doing all kinds of things? We would like to talk today about Mr. Claus and NORAD, and we think that perhaps if you have young people, if you're in the car listening to this or someplace else where you might have young people with you, it might be a good thing not to have them listen to this particular episode because there might be dream crushing involved.
Yes.
Yeah. So we just want to get that warning out now.
Yes.
We're not going to try to crush your dreams, but you know, Augie's never trying to crush my dreams when he starts.
Yeah. Let's be very clear here, faithful listeners. Okay. When we start an episode, it's not my intent to crush Nia's, you know, hopes and dreams of, you know, running the Space Force Library or becoming president or secretary of defense.
I want to be the head of the government services administration, right? The GSA.
That is your latest ambition. Yes.
Because that's all the power.
Yeah. All the power.
But every 4 years.
Well, but you know, hey, I mean, you know, like many powers, do you really want to go ahead and use it too much?
No, that's true. It doesn't have as much impact if although we do have a request, by the way, to follow up with what the heck the GSA actually does.
Oh, hey,
so episode. We'll be talking about that in the spring. Those who are tired of the elections, we can also say, so are we. My goodness, we're tired of talking about this. So you should expect in the spring a lot less
election ribbon. Yes. Right. I mean, yeah, we're going to go back to our usual, you know, find some sort of idiosyncratic government document or phenomenon or,
right.
you know, we may talk about a court case dealing with mud flaps, which is what we did a couple of years ago, which, you know, quite a few of our listeners are like, I never knew that about mud flaps. Well, right. You know, hey, okay.
Yeah, so expect that you will see a return to our previously scheduled way of doing the podcast. We enjoyed the election coverage, or at least I can speak for myself and say I enjoyed the election coverage, but I'm also ready to move back to what we originally got into this, which is what the heck does the government do and what are the documents that support that so that you can go and read that stuff. And lots of stuff is being published online.
Yes.
So the good news is that you'll be able to connect with it electronically through our research guide.
Yes. But so today's episode, much like we did last December when we talked about Christmas decorations at the White House, including trees, and also last year, you ought to take a look at this, a gratuitous self-plug. We did an entire episode about presidents pardoning turkeys,
yes.
which for those of you who may have gotten caught up in the post-election news and may have missed this, President Trump did go ahead and follow tradition. He pardoned a turkey. he had a choice of two. Just like the infamous West Wing episode, he had a choice of two. He pardoned one, but postscript, both birds ended up having their lives saved. But nevertheless, kind of sort of following up.
I don't remember their names this year.
Neither can I. But you know, as long as we're doing this podcast, Nia and I hope. That every year about this time, we're going to do a holiday related, if you will, episode. In today's episode, and again, we've already given the warning about who should not listen. And that is, we're going to look at Tracking Santa But NIA's got an update on the names of the turkeys under consideration this year for the pardon.
They were Corn and Cobb.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Corn and Cobb.
Corn and Cobb this year.
Yes. Yep.
So.
Yes.
Okay. So there's, I know that this story is somewhat well known, but I'm not entirely sure that all the details are well known. And actually, I believe from your research, the first time that NORAD or some other part of the federal government began to track Mr. Claus on Christmas Eve was not the infamous story that everyone knows.
Correct.
Right? It was something else.
Yeah. So first, let's repeat, if you will, the basic details of the well-known story. So, you know, the story that usually gets repeated is that the United States federal government began to track Santa's movements on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day because of a department store promotion that kind of sort of went askew. Okay.
That's one way to put that.
So in 1955, the Sears department store, okay, had a promotion where people could dial a toll-free number and talk to Santa. Okay. Because, you know, for, you know, folks, I mean, folks know this, kids like to talk to Santa, you know?
Well, in 1955, not a huge number of people would have had phones.
Phones. Okay. Yes. I mean, there
right.
was.
Right. So this wasn't like, oh, we're going to get trillions of calls the way it would now. Like if you did that now, if you said, we're going to let you talk to Santa now, you'd have to have a bank of 5,000 Santas working all the time.
Yeah. But back then, there were significant numbers of people in the United States and significant parts of the country who were without phone service. So this wasn't considered, you know, something, you know, the Sears department store was not going that far out on a limb by having this promotion. But nevertheless, a young girl in Colorado dialed the wrong number, and she actually got the Continental Air Defense Command, which it was the predecessor for NORAD, the acronym.
CONAD.
CONAD, okay, which is was located in Colorado Springs, Colorado.
Okay, can I just say that that makes me want to pick up my phone and start dialing like one number off of things to see what I get? Because I'm not entirely certain that I think that the safety of the Air Command of the United States should be one number off from the Santa number for Sears.
Sears.
That's a little terrifying. That you know what I mean? Like, but it also makes me think, ooh, maybe I could figure out the phone number for the Situation Room in the White House. And then I could just be call up and say, hey, what are y'all doing? You know, wouldn't that be fun? Except the FBI would probably show up at my door approximately an hour later saying, why are you calling the Situation Room?
Yeah, right. You know,
I wonder, did anybody show up at this little girl's door and say, excuse me, how did you get the number for?
Yeah, you call up a number for a takeout, right? And you dial the wrong number. And the next thing you know, you're talking, you know, to somebody who's, you know, manning a desk, watching troop movements in another part of the world. How did you get this number, sir? Hey, all I wanted was a medium pizza with pepperoni and mushrooms.
Right. I'm going to have to transfer you to someone else. Probably a person who's going to put you in prison. Yeah. I mean, there's this weird, I think that that's hilarious that the numbers were close enough that if a little girl dialed them, she dialed them incorrectly, she would get. And hilarious that somebody answered the phone. Because you would imagine that they'd answer the phone, Continental Air Defense Command, how may I help you?
Yes. Well, and that's the thing. The staff at CONAD, okay, found out what happened. I mean, like in any government agency, okay, when something strange or unusual happens, okay, the rumor mill, the gossip mill within the agency, Okay, it got reported rather quickly because the young girl actually got a colonel who was on duty who took the phone call, right? So in many government agencies, particularly those who are, you know, where the positions are considered, you know, vital or essential, there's always somebody at the agency who takes phone calls, right? You see this in police departments, EMT units, hospitals.
I promise you that somebody at NOAA answers the phone all the time.
Yes, right? You know, somebody at the Department of Homeland Security, right?
Answers the phone all the time, right? Like, you know, I want to report a terrorist. Oh, sorry, we're all gone for the weekend. Like, yeah, no.
Yeah, okay. You know, FEMA does, right?
Right.
And likewise, the various units of the Defense Department, okay, they had somebody taking phone calls. In this case, it was a colonel, okay? His name was Colonel Shoup, okay? And he wasn't a big fan of what the communications department of CONAD actually came up with.
But he answered the girl, right? Like did actually say to her, we're tracking him and he's going to be there Christmas Eve. So be good. And, you know,
and do what your mommy and daddy tell you to do. And when you wake up tomorrow morning, okay, from what we've been able to gather, Santa will be there. Right.
Okay. So he did, at least he didn't say, crazy little girl, this is the air command, right? Like,
he didn't crush
your dreams. He just.
But, you know, he didn't see what the communication staff of CONAD, okay, could see. Okay. Because remember, there are a lot of people who work in government who have serious jobs. They don't necessarily, you know, if you are part of air command of the United States government post-World War II, okay, you know, post-Korean War, you're not really thinking about PR opportunities of the federal government, okay, in Santa Claus. No, what you're thinking is, okay, we got a Cold War going on, and my job is to make sure that tomorrow morning, the United States is not in a war with the Soviet Union.
Well, and I'm just going to go out on a limb and say, like every person who works in a government agency, speaking as a person who works in a government agency, right? One of my goals in life is to not be in the news. I want there to never be a report of the public affairs librarian at VCU did this incredibly criminal / publicly embarrassing / obnoxious thing, and we're going to be on the 6 o'clock news with it. Like, I never want to be in that kind of news. So I try to not be in the news at all, except for extraordinarily good things. But we have a PR department in the library that it's their job to try to get out the good information and the good things that we do. But that's not my job. My job is to make sure I don't do bad things, right? And my job is to do a good job at my job. So then they can say, look, what a good job we're doing. This is a great thing, right? So I'm part of him, I'm sure, was thinking, immediately when he realizes it's a little girl, he's thinking, don't screw this up.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Don't make this little girl cry. Don't make her parents call the news and say the mean colonel was awful to her and made her cry, and now she doesn't believe in Christmas anymore. Like,
yeah, I mean,
you know what I mean? Like, all of that went through his head, I'm sure, is like, oh no. And then you get the PR people who are like, oh, gold mine.
This is a gold mine, right? That's a common story.
Right.
But to your point where we started off the episode, the first time the federal government said it was tracking Santa was in 1948. The United States Air Force Public Relations Office made an announcement in 1948 that they had an unidentified sleigh powered by reindeer on its radar.
So that's 7 years before the traditional.
Yes, 7 years, right?
And it went nowhere.
Nowhere. Absolutely nowhere.
Which shows you that marketing is hugely about the moment.
Sure. Okay.
Like, marketing of anything, including the government. Like somebody came up with that. It's a great idea. I personally, as a child, every year watched it on the news, right? Because they showed it, the weatherman would say, and now we're going to show you where Santa is. And they would somehow show you the NORAD satellite and the whole,
because
all that stuff. And we go, he's over China. And my mother would say, oh, you have to go to bed. You don't want to be awake when he comes, because if you're awake, he won't stop, right? Like, it was a great way for my parents to get us to go to bed.
Oh, hey, parents across the United States and eventually the world, okay, would use that, right? And it always happened during the weather portion of the nightly news.
Yep.
Okay. The weather forecaster would say, okay, yes, we are getting snow, or no, we're not getting snow. It's going to be a white Christmas. It's not going to be a white Christmas. And oh yeah, by the way, we've already tracked on our radar. Okay. And this has been verified by the U.S. federal government. Santa has left the North Pole. Okay. And he is now here. Okay, in some northernmost point of Canada, okay, starting his journey to deliver gifts and presents to kids across the world. And at that point, you know, just like your parents, my mom would go ahead and say, okay, kids, if you want Santa to, you know, stop, you better get to bed, because he's already left the North Pole.
Right. Right. It was great leverage.
Yeah, right.
Great leverage for, and then at the 10 o'clock, it became an emergency.
Yes.
If you weren't asleep by now, this is an emergency, because he's super close. And he's not going to stop, because he doesn't stop for kids who are awake. Right. Yes. Like, my mom just made it very clear, he does not stop for kids who are awake. And so you would go and lay down, squish your eyes closed, and try to go to bed. But what's amazing to me is that they tried that the first time.
Went
and
nowhere.
What eventually took off was like, yeah, whatevs, who cares? And then 7 years later, you get this confluence of a little girl and an accidental phone call, and somehow that blossoms into this thing that I remember very positively from my childhood.
Oh, I mean, I remember it. I mean, all my friends, and, you know, to update this, and we will get to, you know, what it currently is today. You know, my daughter's 8 years old. She still believes in Santa. We have, for the last 4 years, gone online on Christmas Eve and checked to see where Santa was.
See, it's a thing. Like,
it's still a thing, right?
First hook at it just didn't.
And it's
all like New Coke. It just didn't take off.
Yeah, right.
Right. But, like, people were like, I'm suspicious of that New Coke because it tastes like Pepsi, so I'm not going to drink it. Right. Because it didn't taste like Coke. And then poof, that went away and they brought Coke back.
But, you know, you throw into the mix, okay, a little girl, Santa, and a curmudgeonly colonel, okay? Right.
Answering the phone stressed out and, you know, trying to be careful about the defense of the United States. And here he is talking to this little girl. It's a Hallmark movie.
Yes.
It's a heartwarming. The only way it would have been improved is if there had been a polar bear involved.
Yes, right? You know, or a penguin.
Right? Or a penguin.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, think about that, right? Yeah,
if Morgan Freeman had done the voiceover for it, that's the only way. I mean, like, you know.
So, a couple years later, CONAD has now been renamed the North American Air Defense Command, which is NORAD. Okay, and some of you are like, you know, geez Louise, government acronyms. Well, you know, hey, that's part of what we do with this podcast, right? Yep. Okay.
We try to translate for you as often as we can.
We expose you to a whole bunch of government acronyms, and then we spend a whole bunch of time explaining what they mean. And sometimes me and I don't necessarily understand. I'm trying to understand where the R comes in, but nevertheless, it became known as NORAD.
Is it NOR? American air defense, but then it would be NORAD. There'd be two A's. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. Sorry, we love you, Department of Defense, but sometimes your
acronyms
are FUBAR.
Which we will not
explain on this podcast because it involves language we don't use.
Yeah, we'll let you explore that online.
From a not work computer.
Yes, because not safe for work.
Okay, so 1958, NORAD takes it over. 1958, NORAD takes it over.
Yes, and then the reporting begins to get really elaborate, okay? They would issue hourly, if you will, communiques about where Santa and the reindeer were.
So right? The PR team took their foot and put it all the way on the accelerator as hard as they could.
Oh my goodness, yes, right? Okay, and then they would start shaping the message so that depending where you were, you could change it. You know, if you were in California, okay, Santa has now crossed over the Canadian state of Washington border, right? You know, if you're in the upper Midwest, okay, he is going through Canadian provinces and it ends up becoming like a geography lesson by default, right?
Okay.
You know?
It shows you where he is on the planet and how far away that is from you. Although sometimes the time zones get a little squishy for NORAD because trying to get the kids to go to bed. So it's not exactly, you know.
But by the early 1960s, okay, and again, for our younger, listeners of the podcast, you know, by the early 1960s, you know, you could track Santa by calling a 1-800 number, okay, with the federal government. You had press releases that media organizations then could use, but there was no tracking online because we didn't have, you know,
online,
the internet, the web, okay.
Didn't exist as we know it. I think there was a military version by that point, but not a widespread used version. But they did release that to like television stations. Okay, wait, we should say for our younger audiences, in the 60s, up until 9/11, there was no such thing as 24-hour news. You had a brief news break at noon.
Yes.
Which would give you, generally speaking, the weather for the afternoon, right? And then at 6, you had 5:30, you had local news, and 6 o'clock, you had the national news. So Mr. Cronkite, who would tell you what's going on in the nation, and then you had news at like 10 or 11, depending on where you were, there would be some sort of late-ish news of what had happened in the early evening or things that they were tracking in the early evening and the weather for tomorrow morning when you got up to go to work and all the sports scores.
Yes. I mean,
huge sports section.
Yes. And then you had print media, right?
I mean, right. You had a morning edition and sometimes an evening edition.
That's right. So, I mean, in contrast to today, where we even have large cities in the United States that don't have daily newspapers, hard copy newspapers anymore. You know, back in the 1960s and 70s, it was not unusual for big cities to not only have multiple daily news newspapers, but some of the newspapers did both morning and afternoon editions, right? Because that's where you got your news. You know, you didn't look it up on your phone because your phone was a landline in your house, right?
When you dialed it, because it was a circular.
Yeah, it was rotary.
It didn't even have the buttons. It was rotary, right?
Yeah, it was rotary. I mean, you didn't get a dial pad on most home phones, landlines, until the 1980s and 90s. And some of you all are like, are you kidding? No, we're not kidding, right?
Yeah, it slowed you down.
It slowed you down.
Slowed you down a little bit.
But I remember reading in the local newspaper or the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, okay, reports, you know, 2 or 3 days before Christmas, okay, NORAD has reported they have seen Santa on their radar coming out of the North Pole, right? I mean, that's
right. Well, they would start by, I think a couple of days out, they would start by reporting activity at the North Pole.
That's right. That's right.
We are tracking activity at the North Pole. We're not sure what it is. It was a surprise. Yes. And then, so they were building this whole surprise thing. And then, you know, he would leave and they would tell you on the news. So I love that. Oh, I think it's very sweet. The government so rarely gets marketing right. Oh. And it so rarely does something that is bipartisanly sweet.
Yes.
Right? Like, okay, we can all agree, I think, that national parks are bipartisanly sweet. They are a public good. They're a benefit to every human, whether you ever set foot in a park or not. The air that they create, you breathe, it's all good, right? Like, but that's a pretty unusual, because you can criticize almost everything about the government.
Yes, right?
I mean, technically, you could criticize national parks if you were a person who's like, no, that should be public grazing land and blah blah blah, like even that. But it's really hard to criticize tracking Santa. You could argue maybe that it's very Christian, it's sure, very Christian focused, but aside from that one tiny argument, I don't know that you could argue against it as a public sweetness or a public good.
It definitely falls into the category of public outreach,
right?
Which, you know, scholars have, you know, long lamented where government, particularly, you know, 20th century, 21st century, where the government frequently is deficient. And this is a bipartisan, if you will, lament, is that the government frequently doesn't do enough good public outreach, right? Because here's the thing. For those of you who are wondering, no taxpayer money is spent on NORAD tracking Santa. There's no public money spent on it, okay?
Right. It's private donations, isn't it?
It is private donations.
And private people who put together all the materials and stuff for it.
It is staffed by volunteers. Okay. The overhead and advertising is handled by corporate sponsorships and ads. Okay. So down at the bottom of the screens, or, you know, you will see, you know, our corporate sponsors are in little fine print. Okay. It is one of the most popular federal government programs, according to public opinion polls. I mean, as Nina just pointed out, even if you're not a big fan of Christmas, even if you don't have kids, I mean, it's tracking Santa, right?
Right. It's hard to argue.
It's tracking Santa.
Especially when you consider how much we despise other parts of the government. Like, the congressional positivity rating, I think, is slightly below the bubonic plague. Yeah. Like, people would rather get the bubonic plague than talk to a member of Congress.
Yes.
So, like, there's a lot of government institutions that aren't super well loved or respected. Well, not probably respected, but loved.
Or
right? Because a lot of them are respected or approved of.
I mean, you know, think about this, for instance, Nia. In a couple months, we will have made it through the winter, and we may have had one or two snowstorms here in the Richmond area. And, you know, come late February, early March, there will be potholes, right?
Yes.
And various local governments will then try to fill them. But no matter how well they do or don't do, we will still be critical about the fact that as we are driving wherever in March, okay, maybe even April, there will be potholes.
Yep, stupid, right? Richmond roads.
Yes,
they're gonna destroy my car.
Yep. Right? And we will pick out the local government in question where we live, where we travel, okay? but that's a lot of roadway to go ahead and make sure that there aren't any potholes.
Right. It's not very fair of us to do that.
But nevertheless, that's what we do.
Right.
Right. And I'm just talking about potholes. We're not even talking about, you know, bigger issues like pandemics or who gets vaccines or whether or not there's going to be a stimulus money to support all those businesses, okay, who are not actually in business because of the pandemic. You know, whatever the case may be, right? But here we have the federal government tracking Santa. No tax dollars are used. Volunteers man the phone lines, okay? You know, one of the great things that I found in doing my research is that Michelle Obama actually was part of the phone bank from 2009 to 2016.
Really?
That's great stuff, right?
Oh my gosh. Okay, so what is that? A few hundred people answer the phones?
About 1,500.
Oh, 1,500. Okay.
Yes.
So 1,500 people answering the phones, like Colonel Shoup, right? Like they're answering the phone for little kids who are trying to call Santa and say,
yes,
I want a horse pony. I want a whatever. I want this. I want that.
No, when you call, and by the way, Mackenzie and I, my daughter, we actually called 3 years ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Because Mackenzie didn't believe Daddy when Daddy said that Santa had left the North Pole.
Oh, so they give you an update of where he is.
You actually talk to a real live human being. It is so cool.
I'm assuming that what they do is find out where you are so they can give you the tailored version of that.
Yes.
Okay.
Because the sweet elderly lady we got on the phone, okay, went ahead and said, oh, you're in Richmond, Virginia. And Mackenzie, you know, said, yeah, well, we don't live in Richmond. We live in Rico. You know, my daughter, you know, correct.
She's very specific.
Yeah, right. Okay. And the nice lady said, well, you know, according to our calculations, okay, and it was Christmas Eve. The nice elderly lady said, by our calculations, Santa ought to be at your house, you know, sometime here in the next 2.5-3 hours. Okay. And of course, I had it on speaker. And I said, so you know what that means, Mackenzie? And Mackenzie, in the classic disappointed kid's voice, yes, I have to go to bed. And the nice elderly lady said, well, you know, if you want Santa to visit, you got to do what mommy and daddy tell you to do. And I was just like, yeah, for the win.
Thank you, nice stranger, for backing me up. Yes.
Yes, right.
Well, okay, so you get a report of where he is. Okay, so you're not calling Santa. You're calling to ask where Santa is.
Yes.
And can you imagine getting Michelle Obama? Like, how cool would that be?
Or you can send an email.
You wouldn't even know. Like, kids don't even know. They're not.
Yes, or you can send an email. So last year, we sent an email on the afternoon of Christmas Eve, and within 45 minutes, we got an email back. I get
you. Wow.
It is so cool. Okay, then, okay, I pulled up, okay, this, you know, if you will, the quote-unquote satellite tracking on my computer, and we watched that for like 8 minutes until Mackenzie got bored. Right?
Yeah.
Yes.
So how many phone calls do they get?
Over 120,000 phone calls every year. Yes.
Holy cow.
Yes.
That's a lot of, you know, if they could monetize that, they'd make a killing.
But
of course, if you had to call, if you had to call a 1-900 number, you wouldn't do it. Like that's part of the magic of it is that it's free. If you have a kid and your kid doesn't believe you, you can say, okay, well then let's call the Santa line and find out where he is.
And because these are kids of the early 21st century, they expect that kind of immediate response, right? I mean, no, seriously. I mean, for the listeners.
Oh my gosh, that first phone call in 1955. Yeah. If another kid had called, they would have gotten a busy signal.
Yes, right?
And that would have been the end of that.
But for listeners who, you know, have kids or who interact with kids on a pretty regular basis, you know what I'm talking about. Kids of the early 21st century, you know, they want immediate feedback. Anything that like takes longer than 5 or 6 minutes, okay, they're like, okay, this is boring, this doesn't work, okay, you're lying to me. But no, we got an immediate response. And when you pull it up, there is a website, NORADSanta.org.
Which we will link to from the research guide.
It received over 9 million hits last year. 9 million. There are people around the world, Nia, okay, who will log on just to go ahead and follow Santa. Around the world. Yes.
Well,
this is cool stuff. Okay.
It is. It's the government at its best.
Yes.
It's the government organizing. And it sounds like it's not just the government. Like it organizes volunteers. It organizes corporate sponsorships. Right. But the government, somebody has to take the initiative to organize all that and get it. And then if it were a corporation, they would want to monetize it.
Yes.
Which is why it's better if the government does it, because then it's not monetized, right? Then it's a 1-800 number free to any kid who can get a hold of a phone. I should put the 800 number on the research guide, which I will also do.
And it's tied into Google Analytics. I mean, think about how many of us use, the Google Maps or, you know, the
Google. Oh, is it on Google Maps? Do they now do?
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
If you have an app, an application, okay, that is tied into Google Analytics, you should be able to go ahead and track Santa. Because I tracked Santa on my phone last year, okay? Because Mackenzie wanted to make sure that, you know, Santa made it through any of the bad weather. She's really a really sweet kid, okay?
She worries about these things. Good for her.
She worries about that because she wanted to make sure that kids in other parts of the world also would have a delivery from of their presents.
And that is, it doesn't just go Christmas Eve, right?
It starts on 4 a.m. on Christmas Eve and it continues until midnight Christmas Day.
Eastern time.
Eastern Standard
Time. So that means it gets all of the kids, like the kids in Hawaii, the kids in Alaska, and then the kids around the world, because that would mean that it would take care of all the kids in other countries as well.
Yes.
Is it an international phenomenon? Do you think that people in other, if 9 million hits, that would have to be.
Yes.
Well, no, it wouldn't necessarily have to be, but it probably is spread across.
But think about.
Probably it is spread across the world at this point.
Think about the number of phone calls, the emails. I mean, over 12,000 emails are received every year, right? Then the 9 million hits, okay? And in mind, by the way, when we're talking about a hit on the internet, I mean, you log on. You don't have to go ahead and log off, right? So, I mean, we came back and tracked Santa, 45 minutes later. Okay, et cetera, right?
Right.
Yeah. That's a cool thing, right?
That's a cool thing.
Yeah, it is a cool thing, right?
And what's amazing to me is that the first time it came up, people were like, eh. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't, we weren't ready for it yet.
That's right.
We weren't as a nation ready to sort of get into the spirit of, the government can do these sort of sweet, lighthearted things, and could be that 48 was still too close to World War II. I mean, there may have been something that made it not as like the marketing zeitgeist just wasn't there. But then you get, 7 years later, you get sort of everything comes together and now it's magical. I mean,
and think about the mindset of the country, right? In 48, you're just out of the Great Depression. You're just out of World War II.
Europe is still quite devastated.
Oh, yeah. Europe is
devastated. The United States has lost thousands and thousands and thousands of men, young men in the war.
Then you had to go ahead and accommodate those who did serve and survive. There was a lot going on in regards to the country, you know, returning to normal, right? Right. But for whatever reason, you know,
although 55, that's before Korea, isn't it? That's
after Korea.
Okay. Yeah. But yeah. Before Vietnam. So yeah. We're in a mid-war period.
Yes.
Okay. Yep. So there's a lot that goes into that, I'm sure, that made it work the second time that didn't really make it work the first time.
Well, and then also
But you know that the people who did it the first time were bitter. They're like, we said that. Yeah. We said that and nobody listened. That would be me writing letters and saying, this was my idea.
And for listeners who've not worked in government agencies, please be sympathetic to both Nia and myself, because, you know, we work for the government, right? We work in government agencies, and it inevitably happens. You have a good idea as a government worker. You pitch it. It goes nowhere for whatever reason or reasons, right?
Right.
Okay, but a few months later, a couple years later, the topic or issue comes back around. Somebody else makes the same suggestion. Then the next thing you know, a majority of the people in the room were like, oh, that's a great idea.
It's a great idea. Why haven't we ever thought of that before? And you just want to thump your head against the table. But instead, if you're a good player, if you're a good team player, you say, great, let's get on it. That's great. I have some ideas about how that might help or work or whatever.
Yeah.
And you join the group.
Yes. And then you
your bitter resentments and talk about it to your family.
Yeah. Or your friends or your colleagues who are like, well, you know, you handled that really well by not being, you know, a bitter jerk or idiot. Okay. Good on you.
But you know what? Either way, we got here and now we're here, and it doesn't look like this is the kind of thing that's going to go away anytime soon.
Oh, no. I mean, no presidential administration, no session of Congress has ever gone ahead and said, we need to end this. Okay. Nobody in the Defense Department says, you know, our job is to protect the nation. Our job isn't to track Santa. Nobody says that, right? This is a good thing, right?
Yeah, it's 65 years. It would be really hard to kill now.
Yes, right? I mean, and again, as somebody who has a child who still believes in Santa, I don't want to have a Christmas where my child says to me, Daddy, where's Santa? Because right now I can say, well, let's go ahead and track them.
Right. If nothing else, you would think that the Department of Homeland Security would want to keep tracking them just in case. Just saying.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I mean, hey, some guy showing up, throwing stuff down your chimney. No. Let's find out who this guy is.
Yeah, that's right.
Let's keep up with what that's, you know, but fortunately they haven't done it as some sort of negative thing, which is, you know.
Well, but, you know, hey, think about the number of movies, okay, where, you know, bad people have used Christmas, okay, to achieve their nefarious means. We don't want that, right? No. You know, we don't want a diehard situation here.
I was going to just say, we don't want Alan Rickman with a bad German accent to show up and do anything to us. Although I would love Alan Rickman to show up. May he rest in peace. Because he's a wonderful actor.
Yeah,
wonderful actor. And if they had just let him have his normal English accent, he still could have been evil.
Yes.
He didn't have to be German.
And for those of you who don't know what we're talking about Die Hard, the first Die Hard movie in the series
of 500, but it's the best one.
Okay, and it talks amongst yourselves, is Die Hard a Christmas movie?
It absolutely is.
Because there are plenty of people, as Nia well knows, because Nia and I have talked about this, there are plenty of people who say that Die Hard is not a Christmas movie. Nia and I are both strongly on the side of course it's a Christmas movie, okay? Because the movie starts with, okay, a Christmas party. Okay. Right. So it's a Christmas movie.
Well, and he's trying to get back with his estranged wife over Christmas.
Christmas.
Hello. Okay. It's a Christmas movie. Because Home Alone is a Christmas movie. That's a Christmas movie.
You know, because again, think about how in the spirit of Christmas, okay, the seemingly impossible is possible.
Exactly.
Right? Okay.
Exactly.
If mass media has taught us, okay, inculcated in us nothing else, in the season of Christmas, anything is possible.
And for those of you who don't celebrate Christmas, we understand that
the holiday season,
the holiday of any sort at this time of year, makes anything possible. So we are not trying to be in any way sort of against any of the faiths, or people who don't have a particular faith at all. What we say is all comers. This time of year, anything is possible, in part because we're at the end of the year, which is its own kind of magic.
Yes.
Right? It's its own kind of magic, because no matter what, 2020 is going to be over in 20-ish days or so.
Yes.
And that will be wonderful.
Yes.
That will be wonderful. And we get to look forward to something new. Like most people in the world, we get to try to start over again in January 2021 and see if we can make it go better.
Yes. I mean, rebirths are a good thing.
Yes.
And whether you celebrate a particular holiday this time of year, or just holidays in general, you know, anything is possible, right? So,
and we wish you happy celebrations of whatever you celebrate, or if you don't celebrate anything, we hope you're happy doing that too.
Yes.
And we will see you again in the spring.
Thanks, Nia.
Thank you, Augie.
You've been listening to Civil Discourse, brought to you by VCU Libraries. Opinions expressed are solely the speaker's own and do not reflect the views or opinions of VCU or VCU Libraries. Special thanks to the workshop for technical assistance. Music by Isaac Hobson. Find more information at guides.library.vcu.edu/discourse. As always, no documents were harmed in the making of this podcast.